I'm Eric Allen for KSCC. The podcast S-Town brought new audio storytelling forms into being, drawing from literature and investigative journalism. It followed the true story of John B. McLemore, who hated his hometown of Woodstock, Alabama, enough to bring it to the attention of the producers of This American Life. Brian Reed then went off on the storytelling trail to investigate a murder that may not have happened, but encountered many strange things that did happen. S-Town was then downloaded 40 million times in the first month after it was released. Now Brian Reed is bringing his live show, Creating S-Town, to the Halt Center in Eugene on February 9th. Thanks for your time today, Brian.
Thanks, Eric. I appreciate it.
Well, storytellers often sense that there's a good story before knowing what the actual story is. Was that true for you in this case?
That was absolutely true. I was interested in John. I was interested in the people he was introducing me to. I was interested in Woodstock and Bibb County, where he lived. But for a long time, the story hadn't really happened yet, if that makes sense. And so it just took time for life to unfold and for the story to happen, for us to have a story that could turn into an audio story, a podcast.
What were the initial elements of it that made you chase it in the first place?
I mean, a few different things. John initially contacted us with an email, the subject line of which was John B. McLemore lives in Shittown, Alabama. Lives in S-Town, Alabama, if you want to take it that way. That caught my eye, certainly, among other listener emails. And then, you know, what he was talking about in that email was that he was just saying that the place he lived in Alabama was so terrible and so rife with corruption. And he was so emphatic about it. And, you know, in particular said that that someone had allegedly gotten away with a murder and that everybody knew it and no one was doing anything, which, if true, is something that a journalist should look into. And then, you know, once I talked to John, he was such an interesting, funny, dark, troubled, intelligent, brilliant person that the combination of what he said was going on and the place he lived and John himself, it was hard to turn away.
How accurate do you think his perceptions were of his hometown?
I think they were very accurate to how he experienced living there. And I think our podcast is not an objective portrayal of Woodstock, Alabama. It is an exploration of what it was like to live there as John B. McLemore. That's what the show is. You know, I think the experience of living there is very different for someone who isn't queer, for instance, or isn't interested in some of the things that John is interested in, who isn't obsessed with climate change. There are many things about John that made it a terrible place to live for him. But also he, paradoxically, was completely of that place. There were so many things about him that were completely Woodstockian. And he also loved it. So it was this complete love-hate relationship, which I think is very relatable. I think probably a lot of us have that about the places we grew up.
One of the things that was interesting about him was what he did as an antiquarian horologist, fixing antique clocks, a disappearing specialty, which is, in its own way, detective work. So you, too, were doing detective work. Did you find a relationship between what is witness marks in clocks, which help you solve fixing clocks, and witness marks in purported crimes?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and honestly, I would say even more broadly, just reporting in general as a reporter, as a journalist, you know, whether I'm reporting on a crime or in this case, I was reporting on a life, John B. McLemore's life, I saw a connection to the idea of witness marks even more so there. Just the things we leave behind as we go through life, as we go through the world, the things we accumulate, the friendships we make, the little comments we say to people that we forget but that they remember for some reason, like those all felt like metaphorical witness marks to me as I was learning more and more about John's life. But, you know, I learned about witness marks from one of John's friends who is a horologist. And as soon as he explained the concept to me, which he explained in kind of a technical way, it stayed with me. And I thought about it a lot, just, you know, in different parts of my life. And no parts of my life involve fixing clocks. Specifically. So I found it a resonant idea.
Perhaps not fixing them, but adhering to them in the radio world is a very strong parallel as well, perhaps.
In the radio world, it is. But in the podcasting world, it's not. That is one of the weird and freeing things about podcasting. My day job is to work at This American Life, and we make a radio version of the show, and then we make a podcast version. The radio version has to be 59 minutes, and we're cutting things out moments before deadline to make it 59 minutes exactly. And then the podcast version, we throw things back in there that we kind of like that we had to cut at the last minute and it doesn't really matter. And that was super freeing with S-Town to kind of have that freedom to have one episode be 45 minutes and one a little over an hour.
You mentioned that you were reporting on a life with John B. McLemore, and unfortunately, part of reporting on that life was reporting on his death as he committed suicide during production. How did you come to terms with that and handle that, both on a storytelling level and an emotional one?
It became the purpose of the story. Doing S-Town was my way of handling it. S-Town is the product of my feeling that John was a person worth memorializing and understanding and giving his fair due. You know, when John died, it was very difficult just personally. I felt sad that he was gone. I felt guilty. I felt many of the things you feel when someone you know dies that way. But I also felt like a bigger feeling, just kind of upset at the world that, like, we as the world didn't make John feel welcome. And so that's partly what I was trying to do with S-Town is to try and explore that and call the world out for that. And this is something that I'll talk about a fair amount in the show when I come to Eugene.
In telling this difficult story of a life and a death in a town and a country, what aspects of literature and journalism did you find yourself particularly drawing from to tell the story?
I read a really random array of fiction, mostly. Even though this is a completely true story that's rigorously reported and fact-checked to the detail. But in terms of what I was kind of reading and taking in, I read a mixture of fiction and books about clocks. Those were basically, that was my reading material for the most part. And some history books about Bibb County and things like that. I made the show with Julie Snyder, who also created Serial. You know, with Serial, she and Sarah Koenig had looked to TV shows, kind of like prestige TV shows, as a model for how to structure the true story they were telling. So shows like Mad Men or Breaking Bad. And then when Julie and I set out to make S-Town, we talked about how we didn't want to model after TV so much. We wanted to look to novels. So, you know, I read like stuff by a novelist I really liked, Edward P. Jones. I read Flannery O'Connor, but also just, I don't know, weird little thing. I read Middlesex, you know, stuff that doesn't really seem related topically. But I just wanted to get, like, the feeling of what it is to read good novels in my head as I wrote this.
To me, music feels like a strong element of S-Town as well, from the original music that's woven into A Rose for Emily by the Zombies, which is the closing of each episode. What did you see as the role of the music in S-Town?
There's two ways that music play a role. You know, there's that song, which is the closing song in every episode, and that's the only song with lyrics. And then there's the scoring music, which was created primarily by a composer named Daniel Hart. They play two different roles. Like, the scoring music, it creates the atmosphere. It moves you along when you're going through plot, and it lets you reflect on emotion when you're feeling emotions. And Julie, who did a lot of the mixing, she really, like, masterfully uses music to signal certain types of themes throughout the show. So, for instance, and this was stuff that I honestly didn't really notice till I listened to the show when it was done. I didn't always have time to listen to the final mixes before we came out. And so this is something I noticed actually just listening myself as a listener. Like, oh my God, Julie's so smart. Like, she's putting the same music under each moment where John kind of has a breakup with some friendship or relationship or goes through some tough time in a relationship. And then she has the same type of music when there's a happy time in a relationship that John has. And just the texture of it, it gives a richness to the story that's not there without the music. And then the Zombies, I chose that song because, you know, when I visited John, he gave me A Rose for Emily, a William Faulkner short story, as what he called bedtime reading, as a way to understand where he lived. And I remember thinking of that song, which I knew, and I played it for him. He had never heard it. And I was like, John, like, you know, there's a song called A Rose for Emily by the Zombies. You want to hear it? He was like, sure. And I was so excited to play it for him, and he did not care. Like, he was not interested at all. But I still like the song, and so I put it at the end.
There's a notion in literature and music as well that stories don't end, that you just stop telling them, and then they go on despite you and beyond you. Do you feel that with S-Town?
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely true. Yeah, I mean, you know, we work on deadlines, and, you know, we abandon our stories. We don't finish them. You know, we get to a point where we've done the best we can. Especially with reporting, you can always learn more. Like, you never know everything. And even if you somehow did know everything up to that point, the moment time goes on, something else happens, and there's something else to know. And so you have to cut your losses at some point, and you have to acknowledge your limits. And I feel like we put in as much reporting as you can possibly reasonably put into a thing with S-Town. I feel good about it.
Now you're on to telling a meta story. You're telling a story about telling a story by bringing creating S-Town to the Halt Center. How do you approach that on a stage?
I'm going to be bringing a bunch of like behind the scenes material, basically. It's going to come in a bunch of different forms. Like I'm going to play a bunch of audio that didn't make it into the show. I'm going to show a bunch of kind of weird reporting materials that, you know, I vacuumed up in the years, the 3+ years that I was reporting this story. And I'm just going to tell anecdotes and talk about our process and kind of give examples of storytelling moves that Julia and I were trying and experimental things we were trying and why I think they worked or didn't work. And just anecdotes of what it was like to know John and know the people down there. And yeah, kind of a mix of all that stuff.
And one story always leads to another. So how has the experience of S-Town and its success led you to whatever comes next?
You know, in the months after S-Town, I've gone back to my day job, which is I'm the senior producer at the radio show This American Life. So I kind of oversee the show here with Ira Glass. You know, a lot of that role is editing. So I'm working with my colleagues here on their stories, talking to them about ideas they have and talking to them as they're out reporting and listening to their tape and structuring stories and coming up with themes and shows and thinking about what we want to cover. And I was very grateful for that after S-Town to have a job that's creative but didn't require me to do a story myself and to use a different part of my brain. I've been grateful for that. I didn't feel the pressure to immediately have to find another story that I loved as much. And I only just now, you know, we're coming on in whatever, 10 months or something after S-Town came out, I'm starting to feel the itch to start reporting again. So there's a couple things that I'm looking into, but it's very early stages. But in the meantime, like I've really been, you know, enjoying working with my really talented colleagues here.
Well, thank you so much for bringing his story to light and for taking the time with me today and for bringing your story to Eugene.
You're welcome. I'm excited to be there.
Brian Reed, host of the podcast S-Town and senior producer for This American Life. Brian Reed will bring his live storytelling skills to Creating S-Town at the Hult Center in Eugene on Friday, February 9th. For tickets and more information, hultcenter.org. To listen to S-Town or learn more, stownpodcast.org. For KLCC, I'm Eric Allen.